Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Live well, win well. It is On Point with Wandel and Stokes right here, News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Let's talk money. Yes, let's talk money with Nativa Hurd, financial educator, certified credit counselor, consumer advocate, and more. I want to say welcome to our Financial Thursdays. Hi, how are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
We are so delighted to have you. Thank you so much for sharing with us today on Financial Thursdays. And we love to talk about money, and certainly we love to be educated about this whole idea of money, our perception, and even our spending habits and things of that nature when it comes to money. Tell us how you even began to have an interest in this type of education and training and advocacy.
Absolutely. I actually started out in 2004 as a realtor, and a lot of the clients that came to us were not quite ready to purchase a home based on the lending guidelines. So we had to work with their credit. We had to work with their budgets. We had to come up with savings in order to pay for the pre-closing costs. So that's what spearheaded it. And then when the Great Recession hit, we felt that in my location around 2008, I knew that the real estate market was going to completely transform, which it did, extremely so. And a lot of the people who were qualifying for some of the loan products back then weren't even close to being qualified under the newer, more restrictive guidelines. So it's about soaring your credit scores. Now we were looking for 580 to 620. Now we were like, that's not going to fly now. We're going to have to go to 680 and above. Now, instead of not having to pay any down payment, we were now going to have to come up with 5% minimum in order to get your foot in the door to homeownership. So that's essentially what spearheaded, in addition to me being adversely impacted by the Great Recession back then. It went from being really, really doing well in the real estate industry to being over $500,000 in debt from real estate foreclosures and medical expenses, because I was also diagnosed with cervical cancer during that time. So it was my journey, my rebuild, and then ensuring that I take my community, whom I call my prosperity partners, along the way with me. And that's what started the Frugal Creditista.
and you know, with that, it's like you're able to take something that was going in a different direction and able to turn it around and make it work for you. And instead of giving up and quitting, you continue to build in a whole different way. And that is a success story within itself. I want to ask you, what is frugal spending?
Frugal spending for me is going to be unique to each individual.
Okay.
Because our lifestyle is going to be unique to what we enjoy doing. But for me, it's definitely paying myself first. I am my first priority. I'm working hard for this money, so I'm getting paid first.
Okay.
So it's going into an emergency fund. It's growing in a investment account outside of my employer's 401k. It's taking into account my personal goals and lifestyle choices and how I want my future self to live. And it's also ensuring that I'm spending not at my income bracket, but also spending below that, in addition to making more money. I think a lot of people think frugal is solely about cutting expenses and living bare bones, but that's not at all. It's really ensuring that your every dollar that you bring in has a purpose, that you're being wise with your spending and you're putting yourself as CEO over your household finances.
That's an excellent model for many to adopt, because you said it's not just about cutting, but it's also about making money and making sure that every dollar counts. So that brings me to this then. How should a budget, what is your advice as it relates to a budget for one's home?
A budget is really, it's your spending plan. Mm-hmm. So you want to know what's coming into my house. What income is coming into my household in addition to where is it going? And you always want to have it to where you have more income than outgo. That's a little joke that we have in our community, that you have more income that you're, you know, coming in than you have going out. And then you want to be able to direct your dollars. I'm a big fan of the zero-based budget. As I mentioned, every dollar has a purpose. And to really minimizing the amount of consumer debt we have and finding different ways to make our money work for us where we're not actively participating with our time and creating those dollars. So obviously compounding interest, reducing the amount of personal and credit card debt that we bring in, and overall just really learning and educating about wealth building practices and ensuring that our money is in alignment with that. So if I'm someone that says, I know popular thing right now is owning a home, then I know that I'm going to have to be mindful of first, educate myself. What are the lenders looking for? Okay, they want me to have about a 640 credit score in order to get a decent rate. Where my credit score is now? Okay, mm-hmm. What do I need to pay off? Okay, let me go to this budget. This is how much I'm bringing in. These are my debt. This is my debt load right now. This is the savings that they typically want me to have on hand. These are some pre-closing costs that I'm going to have to take care of. These are some post-closing costs that I'm going to have to take care of. Now let me go to my where am I now and then start directing my dollars to fulfill that goal. I'm a strong advocate of your budget being the plan in which you bring your short and long-term goals into fruition. So a lot of people think it's just, I know my sister and I always say, a budget is so restrictive. I'm like, the budget is freeing. Spending without knowing what's going on, can you imagine what a business would do? I mean, a business would fail. And so many of our household businesses are good when the economy is great and our income is great. But as soon as something like COVID-19 comes, we realize how on shaky ground that financial foundation is. So we want a strong financial foundation that allows that. Don't get me wrong. A lot of us were shattered with COVID-19, no matter how strong, but it's not going to be completely destroyed. And so that's what budgeting is, ensuring your financial foundation is on point so that it's really actively putting you control of your dollars.
That's good. Andrew out of Fayetteville has a question for you. Go ahead, Andrew. Welcome to On Point.
Good morning, ladies. How you doing?
Good.
Good morning.
Yeah, my question is, if I want to build wealth, you talked about real estate, where would I start as far as real estate, as far as building wealth? And also, can you talk about tax lien?
Sure. I'm actually a tax lien investor. So I will say about building wealth, people always say that real estate is a way to build wealth, and I am an advocate of that. I own property, and I also do tax lien investing in the Midwest. So where would you start? I always say educating yourself first. There are so many people who jump in head first. And they don't really, basically, they get screwed. So what you want to do is first start a location. Where do I want to invest at? What type of property do I want to invest in? And location is so important because there are certain aspects of a neighborhood that can never allow it to increase in value. And then you also want to think about the caliber of tenants that you're going to have in a neighborhood that you select. So education is key. Tax liens is a great investment opportunity. And you don't necessarily have to live in the state in which you invest in. And I also want to be very clear that when you invest in tax deed sales or tax lien sales, there is a difference. So look up those two. You're going to want to know the full process because I've met a lot of people who've lost money. There was a lot of things that I didn't know until I got an attorney to walk me through it. So you want to know if you decide to do it in your state, North Carolina, to know what type of deed sales and lien sales that they offer. I know it's auction-based there. Then you're going to want to know what are the steps to take or what are the chances of me actually getting this property. A lot of times people think they're going to get the property if it's a tax lien sale. Well, in actuality, somebody can actually outbid you. The the owner of the property can come and pay off their taxes where you generally can get anywhere from 10% or more on your money that you invested in a tax deed, which is phenomenal because the stock market isn't producing that right now. So just going to it, well, if I don't get the property, I'll at least get a good return on my money, and knowing all the ins and outs of the process of bidding, if you can get overbid. I know in North Carolina they have a process where someone can overbid you X amount of days after the property. I went through that in North Carolina and didn't like it. So that's what I'm telling you.
Hold on a second, Ms. Hurd. We're going to go to break and come back as you continue to respond to that question. Also, Sharon, I have you coming up next as well. It is Financial Thursdays on Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Live Well, Win Well. It's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes, talking with Nativa Hurd, financial educator and certified credit counselor, sharing with us today, 404-892-2703. You can call in with your questions to our guest today. You were talking about investing in tax liens, and you can continue what you were saying before the break.
Thank you. I was just going to advise just to continue forward to educate yourself as much as possible. And with tax lien, it's very location specific. So each location would have a variance. There may be bid down rates. There may be, like I said, a certain amount of time for you to be outbid once you actually win a bid on a property. There's a tax lien where you have the lien on the property. Then there's a tax deed where you get the property outright after a certain amount of time has transpired. And as long as certain things are, or certain criteria are met. So just be very, very careful about just jumping into it without education, because you do not want to lose your money. That is ultimately not the goal.
Right. Sharon out of Atlanta has a question for you. Go right ahead, Sharon.
Good
welcome.
Morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to know, in this recession, since we had a COVID-19, it seems like it's going to affect not only the tenants, but the landlords and the investors, because the landlords and investors invest in property, and they no longer receiving money, no longer getting money of their property. They're going to probably lose that because they're not getting income, because people are not going to work. You can't work right now. I feel sorry for the people who have just a regular job and can't pay their rent or mortgage, but the people who receive a government check, I notice a lot of them are buying cars instead of saving their money and putting it to good use and paying their rent. Because I think it was in April or March, when the mayor, City of Atlanta mayor, told people that the investors cannot put people out of their houses. And she did a good thing because she's looking out for the citizens. I understand that. She always look out for the citizens. But these people got it wrong. They only heard one part of what she was saying. She didn't tell them to stop paying rent, because some of them receive, like I say, government checks. They just stopped paying rent, start buying cars. So what's going to happen, or what can happen? This is financial crisis going on. What do you say about this situation? What can be done?
Thank you, Sharon, for your
question. Thank you.
As a landlord, we are sympathetic, empathetic with what's going on with tenants today. And just like I was telling you, the young gentleman before, that when you're investing, start to invest in real estate, it is a business. And so you want to educate yourself and also have some financial reserves. So some landlords are doing okay, and some landlords were impacted greatly, especially if they have a loan on the property. Most consumer rights are going to benefit the consumer instead of the business owner. So the strategies that landlords can take, number one, we cannot tell a tenant how to spend their government funds. It's happened. If you looked up in research or in Google right now about landlords that have looked up their tenants' information on the IRS site to see if they got paid and then told them so, that did not end very well for them. So we have to decide how we are going to approach each tenant individually. There are a lot of landlords in pretty shaky situations, especially if they had a tenant that was not doing well, basically who was a bad tenant even before COVID-19. Well, what do we do now? COVID-19 protections under the CARE Act expire the end of this month on the 31st. And some states are either going to extend that or amend that. And some of the federal things, acts or rights or laws or what have you that are about to be passed are all in protection for the tenant and not the landlord, which is why so many businesses, commercial and residential, are against it. What can you do? Keep copious records. Make sure you communicate properly according to your tenant right laws, and make sure that you don't do anything that's going to get you into trouble. So I would say follow your tenants, follow your state's tenants and landlord guidelines strictly. And then when these protections lift, make sure that you use your pull on those protections as well to ensure that you either A, get the property back, or B, that means eviction, or B, make arrangements with the tenant who may have legitimately financial concerns or financial hardship right now. So that would be my advice. Don't do anything. I mean, you can't make a pay. I mean, we never could, even before COVID-19.
Right.
They're going to do what they're going to do, you know what I'm saying? So you just have to pull on your rights under tenant and landlord laws with your particular states and pull on those. So, and keep records of everything, all communications, everything.
That's good. That's good. Wow, that's good advice. 404-892-2703 is the number to call. There's a class and an education that you do as it relates to soaring your credit score. How do you achieve that? How do you build your credit score? What are the tips?
Yeah. So building your credit scores, I always tell my students that credit is a reflection of how well you manage your financial responsibilities. So a lot of people always come to me wanting to build their credit scores. And then when I say, well, let's look at your budget, they're like, I don't need to know anything about budget. How are you going to keep and maintain and soar credit score and keep it soared if we're not looking at the money as well? So the beginning is really ensuring that your budget is on point, that you have system and processes in place to always ensure that, A, you know when something has to be paid, when it has to be paid, and how much of your money is going out to pay it. Then, before you add on any other credit product or introduce credit into your financial household at all, you already know what's going on with your money and how much you can bring on. I have so many students that have gone out and gotten a house or gotten a car, and they think, you know, I think I can swing this. It's okay. You shouldn't think. You should know, because you should spend it on paper first. Mm-hmm. That way, once it's spent on paper and it's comfortable, once you introduce that new credit line into your budget, it's something that you know that you're going to be comfortable with, because you still ensure that you can save. You still ensure that you can invest in yourself through some type of retirement funding, what have you. You're still ensuring that you can get insurance for yourself, and you can take care of your regular need-based expenses. You can take care of this new credit line that you want to do, and you can still have a lifestyle. So that's a lot, but it is a process. Before you just bring credit in, you want to know, can I really pay for this credit line that I'm bringing in? And as you do that, you want to make sure that you're paying on time, the 35% of our scores. You want to make sure that you bring credit cards into your financial household, that you're keeping it very low and not using credit as an extension of your income. It's a tool just like money, and not to be used as your emergency fund or as, well, I don't have the money right now, let me use my credit card. It's a tool and not an extension of our income, so it should be used just to increase the scores. And so I always say credit has three functions: save, build, and own. Save, we automatically know the savings, whether you're getting utilities, a cell phone, a job even. Ownership is home ownership, a car, things of that sort, and then build. A lot of companies are now starting to use your credit score, personal credit score, even if they're just looking at it. When you're looking for a business account, a business credit card, a business loan, when you're looking to invest in real estate, like the gentleman mentioned before, you can get a tax lien property, but then you probably are going to have to put some money into it. What are you going to pull on? You're going to pull from a business loan or a rehab loan, or maybe, you know, one of those hard loans. But at any rate, you want your credit to be on point so that you can accomplish those three things while you are making moves. You're saving, owning, and building, and getting the best rates and terms possible.
Do you think people have it twisted as to the reason or the purpose for having a credit card as a tool, or establishing credit as a tool instead of it being an emergency fund?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. I get that many don't worry about credit until they want something. And then it's like, hey, you know, can you help me get, you know, to 680 or 730 days? Like, ma'am, you're at 400 and something. Absolutely not. This is going to be a process. And then I also get, well, you know, I don't have any savings, but I have my credit card. And what if, I don't know if anybody who's listening right now have seen, but what if you've been relying on these credit cards as your emergency fund with no true savings saved up, and then they start cutting limits? Over 1 in 4 American has had at least one card whose limit has been cut significantly since like March. So mm-hmm. when you were relying on that credit card as an emergency fund, the credit card issuers can cut that limit at will, and they have been at will, and now you have nothing.
Right. What is an emergency fund? We're going to talk about it. How do you establish an emergency fund? Because as she said, it should not be your credit card. Keep listening. It's a Financial Thursday on Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. Live well, win well. It's on Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes on this Financial Thursday. We have Nativa Hurd, financial educator, certified credit counselor, and consumer advocate, sharing with us today on this Financial Thursday. Tell us how an emergency fund should be structured for individuals.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the first thing I always say, again, it starts with a budget because you want to know what's coming in, what's going out, and overall what your expenses are, because an emergency is money set aside for an emergency. And people have different ideas on how much they should save. I know at the end of 2019, I thought, okay, 3 months, I should be fine. We have the rental income. We have the business that's doing well. We're great. Come February, I started seeing all the landlords who were saying they're not getting any more money, and I started to freak out a little bit. I was, okay, we need to increase this like now. So knowing what your bare bones living expenses are is super important, because then you can say, how much of my living expenses do I have saved up if something happens to me or my income? How many months can I live based on what I have saved up? Or if something happens with the house, what financial savings do I have, or what savings do I have in order to take care of that? So it's really a matter of determining how much you like to save, whether you're going for a specific dollar amount, where you're going 3 to 6 or even a year's worth of living expenses saved up. Determine that first. Next, decide on where the home for that money is going to go. If you're trying to do it at the same income the same bank account, rather, that you're spending money out of and paying your bills out of, that's not going to work. It has to be totally separate. When I first started getting my income on Point, I opened up a credit union loan like states away. It was out of state, and the mm-hmm. only time that I can withdraw out of it is if I called and they mailed me a check. And I did that because I had no self-control at the time. I knew that if it was attached to my bank account, I was going to spend it, and I needed to start changing my habits. But that was the first time I saved up $10,000, and I was like, oh my gosh, because I'd never been able to save up that much, because as soon as it was attached to my bank account, whenever I wanted something, I knew that money was there. It was mm-hmm. too tempting. So I had to create a home so that you allow it to accumulate, and it's inconvenient for you to touch it. It's not attached to your main bank account other than sucking money out when your check gets deposited, and then going there to have its home and build up and be there for you when an emergency arises and you need to pull on it. And then calculating your monthly expenses, like I mentioned. So, yeah.
Yeah, being true to oneself and knowing what you can and cannot do. You can't trust yourself.
I could not. I could not.
Andrew out of Fayetteville has a question for you. Go ahead, Andrew. All right, let's go to our next caller. Vanessa out of College Park.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. My question is regarding property tax. And I've been fighting with my mortgage company because, you know, your insurance and your taxes are included in your mortgage. Mm-hmm. And back in April, I received a letter from a investor that paid my 2018 property taxes. So they sent me the letter to repay them, which was, of course, more than what the taxes actually were. Okay, so I sent the information to my mortgage company, and they said they would get back with me by June. They did, but when they got back with me, they exhausted all my funds out of my escrow to pay this situation, and now they're coming after me to put it back. And I feel like I'm paying it twice. It's all my mortgage had no, my escrow had no surplus. You know, nothing changed. So where did my money go? Why wasn't my taxes paid? Why did a third party have to pay my taxes when I was paying it in my mortgage? Never missed a beat. On time every month. And they just won't give me no explanation. And they're making me repay, and I already paid through my mortgage, if you follow what I'm saying. And I've been arguing with them, fighting with them, and I don't know what to do, because you know, you taking this money in my mortgage. This is 2020, and you talk about 2018. And they want me to call.
Okay, so.
Okay.
What I would do, I mean, trying to get answers on the phone is not going to work. You want to see paperwork. You want a full accounting of your escrow. You want to know what happened in 2018. As you mentioned, I'm assuming that you had the house before 2018. They had the escrow set up to where nothing was paid. So you want to get a full accounting of what's going on. That means you want to know how much was put aside from when you were paying your mortgage. So how much was put aside for taxes, what was going on, and you want it from before 2018 all the way through present day so you can see exactly what happened. And you may have to seek an attorney out on this if you're getting pushback. There's no way that anyone is handling or that we're paying someone and we shouldn't be able to get paperwork on what's going on. So the whole thing, they won't give me any answers, is not, no, that's not acceptable, number one. And you also have a Consumer Financial Protection Office. Every state, every county, every location has one. So if you have to go to them for free assistance so they can intervene on your behalf, how that works, you go there, you let them know what's going on, and instead of you calling trying to get answers, they will call on your behalf. And trust me, when the state starts calling, then you'll get answers, then you'll get the paperwork. Once you have that in hand, I would not, if something doesn't look right, that's when you may want to get an attorney involved, because there's no way, like I've seen people be short before because taxes fluctuate, but I've never seen anything not be paid when there's money that's there. And if there was an overage, why wasn't it paid? I mean, if there's an overage, meaning if your taxes were higher, usually they contact you and you would just pay that overage, but it shouldn't be nothing was paid at all whatsoever.
Yes, ma'am. I was wondering. Now, tell me if I'm making sense when I'm talking to them, because it was no overage, no shortage, no notification of anything. Nothing changed. And if you're aware of Fulton County from 16 through 15 through 18, you know it's been a discrepancy in the county taxes anyway. But and so it was at a freeze. But my question is, if my money, if I've been paying it in my mortgage, you haven't notified me of a shortage. And now you're there telling me I need to contact either Fulton County or the best investor that pays the taxes off for me. No, that's unacceptable, because you got my money. And they're making me sound like I'm just stupid. And I understand what you just said, and I'm going to get on that. And I'm going to have to pay now. My mortgage has skyrocketed because of this. And it's just unacceptable, because I don't owe you this money. I'm paying you twice. Do that make sense? If I got to pay you twice.
Well, the money for 2018 was there. What you're probably overpaying is the extra they had to pay when the taxes were purchased. That's the interest on top of it that goes to the investor as interest earned on the money that he'd used to pay the taxes. The question is, why were the taxes purchased in the first place? Why weren't they paid with the escrow money, with the money in escrow that you've been paying as you've been making your monthly mortgage payments, presumably on time and all of that good stuff? So that's what you have to find out through them. And that's not going to happen on the phone. You're not going to ask questions when you get in there. The only thing you're going to ask for is records, and then you're going to back it up with a letter. And if you get pushback from that, like I said, I will go to your local, either your attorney general's office, since they are probably closed right now, the local consumer protection office. But the attorney general's office is open. And if they are open, the consumer protection office, then just call up there and let them know what's going on. Usually they have some type of online form. They have you speak with somebody. They get your contact information from for your mortgage company, and then they intervene on your behalf and they call for you.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you,
all
Vanessa,
right.
For calling. Gideon out of Atlanta. Hi. Welcome to On Point. Well, listen, hold tight, Gideon. Ms. Hurdle, address your question and answer your question when we come back. You'll be able to ask it. It's a Financial Thursday right here. It's On Point with Wanda Lynn Stokes. Keep listening. More to come. Nativa Hurd is our guest today on Financial Thursday. She's a financial educator, certified credit counselor, and consumer advocate. Gideon of Atlanta has a question for you, Ms. Hurd. Go right ahead, Gideon.
It's been heard, and I do tell. And it is a blessing to speak to both of you all, my sister, girl, and friend, and to you, Ms. Hurd. How are you all today?
Great.
Great, thank you.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. You know, as a financial professional, and you definitely sound like you know exactly what you're talking about. And Brother Garvey has warned me. He said, Gideon, don't get too deep. So I will certainly not do that. I'll just keep it on the surface. But, you know, the Bible says that money, the love of money, is the root of all evil. And it also tells us that if we save by and by, that we can have something for our children in the future. When you look at our people today in America, and you as a financial analyst and watcher, what would you say for our children to use money? Because I was just looking at this news article, this producer of a movie called Jumping Jack. He was a millionaire, and he just jumped out of a 27-story window of a luxury hotel. And he had money. And when we look at our people, we supposedly make more money now than some countries as a people, but we haven't been able to use that money to extricate ourselves or prepare ourselves or even buy independence for ourselves. What would you say as a financial analyst and expert that we need to do with our money where it can help to provide for us a future for our children and independence for us as a people?
That is a lot to unpack. I thought you weren't going to go too deep. Like, what? Well, number one, I love that you stress the love of money is the root of all evil. But attaining and achieving financial success and then passing that on and down through our children and creating a legacy and building generational wealth, that's not a love of money. That's taking care of our family, even those who haven't been born yet. So I love that you differentiated that with the love of money. You also mentioned the person who had money and then committed suicide, and money doesn't heal. Money isn't a healer. Okay, so if there's any mental things going on, we have to heal ourselves. I often tell people in my school, I have a DIY online credit and wealth building school, Credit on Fire Academy, and I always tell them that sometimes you have to heal yourself before you heal your relationship with money. You have to heal yourself first because money is just going to exacerbate that. And we see a lot of people with money who are also not quite, A, they're not happy, and B, they're not in love with themselves. And the relationships around them are superficial because of that money. So money isn't a healer. Money is a tool. And that tool shouldn't be to change people, to change yourself. No, that has to happen totally separate of any external force. That has to do with some internal work. Now, what can we do with our children today? Honestly, what can we do, period, even as adults? We have to change how we view money. We have to change how we spend money, and we have to change that spend to investing money. And we also have to think about not just today, but how are we going to provide for our future selves? I have people inside, well, A, as clients and also as students inside of my Credit on Fire Academy. And we tend to think of right now. You know, even with COVID-19, you know, oh, they got this hardship program. Let me go, you know, get into that and just not have to worry about it right now. But we're not asking important questions. What happens after this period ends? What happens? Will I have to provide a lump sum? Like, we have to start thinking not just about right now and pacifying right now, but then again in the future as well. So when I'm talking to my sons are younger, but right now I'm instilling in them the financial literacy that wasn't taught to me and still isn't taught in school. I mean, right. In my home state, they're talking about having history include LGBTQ. I hope I got all the acronyms right. I apologize if I didn't. History until our schools, but they haven't mentioned anything about financial literacy. That's powerful.
Right.
And
right.
It's not the fact that we shouldn't learn different types of history, but we have to learn how to manage our money. We have to know about money so that it constantly can't be getting it, spending it, but no, pausing and really learning how to be in control of the money that's flowing into our household. And that has to start now. And oftentimes, and this is what I tell my students, as you're learning as an adult, bring your children along with you in the journey. We have a budget meeting and we sit down. I don't tell them too much of my business because kids have big mouths, but they do know about how much money we're bringing in, what our expenses are, why we're going to delay gratification for X, Y, and Z, what our ultimate goal is. Next month, we're learning about stocks, and we already have an account for them, but I'm going to actually let them play a game so they can start learning more about stocks, because I didn't learn about that till I was well in my 30s, okay?
Wow.
So, but if they start now and they learn with us, guess what? They can start making better decisions moving forward. And we don't always have to be the person, well, I don't want to be embarrassed. I hear that so much. I don't want to be embarrassed. But we need to tell our kids the mistakes that we made. I tell them all. I tell them why I ended up in $500,000 in debt. I tell them how I had to file bankruptcy. I tell them what my credit scores were and how I was able to move it along. But don't be afraid to share their journeys, work with your children, learn with your children, and then expose them to the financial information that we were not and still are not exposed to, because we can't rely on the schools anymore.
That's right. How can people get in contact with you? You offer classes, you do coaching. How can people find out more about what you do?
Absolutely. I actually have a freebie for the audience, and I included some financial information on budgeting. I included a full credit manual and a 5-day credit class, free dispute letters, and some of everything else. And that is going to link you to my free Facebook community where we talk about money, credit, and everything in between. And if you go to creditbuildswealth.com, that is going to get you not only access to my freebies, but also access to a method of getting contact with me, asking more questions, and just getting on this train to financial empowerment. As I say, I mentioned credit, money, credit, and everything in between, so that we can really get on a train to just uplift, getting that lifestyle back,
right,
and getting
right.
releasing that, get that peace of mind back. I mean, people always tell me, oh, I'm so stressed. Well, take a step back, feel that stress, do the work, and get your peace. Let's get on the peace of mind train.
That's right. Let's get on the peace train. George out of Noonan has a quick question for you. Go ahead, George.
All right. Good afternoon. Okay, I got a quick question. Okay, so your spouse is on the mortgage and you're on the deed. The spouse passes away and you continue to make the payment to the mortgage company, which you've never been late. Everything is fine. How difficult is it to get it switched over if your credit is not where it should be? Or should the person just continue to just make the payment in your spouse's name? That makes sense.
Yes, it does. I mean, you're getting into a state of everything on that. But if your spouse passed away and you're not on the mortgage, you're going to want your credit on point to get on the mortgage, because there's a preparation. This is why estate planning is so on point, and that's why we talk about this inside my DIY school. But there's a few people who could inherit or assume the payment. It really depends on what the successor process is in your state. So, gosh, I had to say this online, but I probably would continue to pay the mortgage. But I would get your credit on point. I mean, if you have looked at any of the fluctuations and requirements for refinancing and also obtaining a mortgage as a first-time home buyer, those guidelines have increased, meaning they're looking for a slightly higher credit score. They're looking for really, really solid employment, especially with over 22 million people plus being laid off and growing. Yeah. And they're also looking for individuals who have money. So you paying the mortgage is not necessarily going to be a huge factor as much as how good you look on paper and the risk. Credit, lending, all those guidelines is based off of financial proof of financial ability and credit worthiness and risk. So it goes into estate planning at this point. It might not automatically go to you. So if I was to talk to anybody, it would be an estate person. If you can go to creditbuildswealth.com and then just reply to that first email, I can get you the person who teaches in my school. She's phenomenal, and she can perhaps give you just some generic advice, being that she's not in your state, but at least get you on the right path to what steps to take next.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hurd. Thank you. We appreciate you so much for sharing with us. This has been awesome. Listen, go to creditbuildswealth.com to connect with her and take advantage of not only the free resources, but also classes, and be a part of her Facebook community. Hey, thanks a bunch. We appreciate you so much, Nativa Hurd.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.